This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 51 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby. Here with Mark Carrig and Andy McCullough. This is the only baseball podcast entirely staffed by giggling idiots. Mark, how are you doing?
Oh, just sitting here being a giggling idiot, checking out our rates and reviews, feeling very bad.
It's the only way to describe us. It's the only way we know how to live. Andy, how you doing?
I thought baseball podcasts were exclusively made of giggling idiots.
Sometimes they're just dour idiots.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't have anyone on that show, on this show like that.
No. Certainly, we don't have a nattering nabob of negativism.
Yeah, we don't have any curmudgeons or curmuxeners.
Is curmuxener a
Aren't
word?
A lot of baseball pods sort of like a knockoff of NPR? It's like Delicious Dish meets First Pitch.
Go on.
Yeah.
Isn't it? They
riff it out.
Real quiet like this. And it's like, hey, have you guys seen Daniel Vogelbach's WRC Plus in the last week?
I'd listen to that podcast.
And there isn't much laughter about it. There's just a lot of, oh, that's interesting. I hear he's got sweaty balls. You know, like that sort of thing, right? Like the straight up NPR. We're not really that, though.
I will say this. It's harder to put together a good podcast than you might think, as this show proves every week that just because you think you're funny doesn't mean the public will agree.
I don't see that at all. I was a natural for this business. I jumped right in, got a following, carrying you guys. So,
I guess I could ask, what do you think you're going to do in 2 years? But what do you think you would have done if journalism didn't work out?
That is a good question. Probably a teacher.
That makes sense.
I love coaching softball, and you know, I coach 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds, and they buy in. They like my brand of giggling idiocy. So I think I would have been a good teacher. Probably more productive for society. Well.
Who is your managerial equivalent? Like, who do you model yourself after?
Oh man, I might just be Joe Maddon. I might just be wacky in all the ways that are annoying. Gotta be Buck. I could be Buck. I give like the, you know, like the high five, and then when they don't give me a high five, I give one of those.
You're like Madden, you don't know who the team's playing. You're just sort of, we're not totally sure who's in the bullpen that night, but you're here, you're riffing.
I'm riffing. Yeah. I mean, that works because if you ask me who the Giants are playing tonight, I guess I know because it's the same series, but I'll go in and it's like, oh, wow, the Pirates. How about that? And it's like, the game starts in an hour. Like, I'm an idiot. Anyways.
Well, you can't be Buck anyway. You said you coach 8- and 9-year-old softball players. Like, Buck would have like 25-year-old players in there because he doesn't trust the kids.
How dare.
should I have done mention, that NPR style? He doesn't trust the kids. He's a little bit fearful of young players.
We should mention the Mets took on water after I rescued their season last week.
Yep. The Mets are
nice
Mets
weekend
are done.
In Colorado. Nice.
God, that place sucks to play. You know, Dave Roberts once told me that every time coming out of Colorado on the ride back from Coors Field to the airport, he would just pass out from exhaustion. Like, even when he wasn't a player, just as a manager. Because it's like an hour-long ride, and he just would just, like, pass out because it was so tiring just to play a weekend there.
I forget about the altitude thing being, like, harder to literally breathe. I forget about that part. One of the ways that I quit smoking was I heard a story about a neighbor who got off the plane, and she was a heavy smoker, and got off the plane and was like, I just can't breathe right now. I need oxygen, like medical, please come over. I need oxygen. And that was what finally got me to quit smoking. I was like,
how long did you smoke?
Like 6-7 years.
You're a merit guy.
No. I was a fancy lad. I smoked Dunhills and American Spirits. Yeah.
Of course you did.
That was a fancy lad.
How did I miss that? What an idiot.
The back of my car was like riddled with old wrappers and Snapple cans and packs of Dunhills. It was wretched.
Wow. That is wretched.
Should we talk baseball today, or are we just going like for the full 1-star review on Apple Podcasts from the angry people?
If we're going to get that 1-star, it'll be for our roundtable head of the week.
Oh, yeah. So roundtable head of the week, we like to start every episode with our roundtable head of the week. And Area Internet User on Twitter says that he's waiting for this podcast to devolve into Grant listing his record collection while Andy humble brags and Mark says something earnest and makes everything weird. Oh, wait, we're there. Thank you. So I appreciate that. And I just wanted to share, I just got this. This is Music for Your Plants. It's classical music, and it's like they're serious. They say this is your plants on rock, and this is your plants on classical. So I'm going to try it.
Yeah, this is going to be a standard episode. Grant is going to tell us all about what the backseat of his car looked like in 1998. I'm going to mention to you all stuff that I predicted correctly, and it was only published in text to Ken Rosenthal. And Mark is going to tell you about how baseball is a civic institution and what the A's are doing is wrong. It's wrong.
Did you see the Senate hearing yesterday? I was following along very closely, and I have to tell you, they already changed the timeline. Now they say the ballpark will not be done until 2028. That is 1 year longer than what the charlatans were saying before. So that's no good.
I mean, it's going to be bad in Oakland for the next couple of years regardless. But what's it going to look like in 2027? Like, how many people are going to be there watching?
What's going to happen here? Like, Mark, like, game it out. Like, you guys are both, you know, you're both Bay Area heads. Like, walk me through this.
They can't stay there. Once the Coliseum lease is up, I think, in 25 or something like that. So they've got some element of they've got to get out of there sooner than this ballpark's going to be built. Now, there'd been talk about the minor league ballpark in Las Vegas, but yeah, that team's not going anywhere, which they actually reiterated yesterday.
I've heard that ballpark's very nice, by the way, for a AAA park. It also seats like 8,000 people. But
right.
Yes, I've heard it's very nice.
I mean, you know, be plenty on fireworks night in Oakland right now. But anyway, like that's, you know, that's problematic because you're trying not to juggle two teams that have to play on that field. You're beating it up and it's still
destroying
like, you know,
the field. Yeah,
right. And it's outdoors, right? So not ideal. I don't even know what some of the precedents would be here, right? I mean, I guess they could theoretically try to pull the Montreal move like they did back in the day and split the season or whatever. And you know, again, we're just gaming this out because you can't, you know, juggling both clubs in one place becomes problematic in its own way. And they certainly can't stay. So I don't know. Do you find a temporary home? Do you pick a team that you know, or city that's sort of on the expansion list and gift them a club for a couple of years and then see if they can make that work? I don't know. I mean, that extra year was actually news yesterday in that hearing. Seriously, like, you know, they've been saying 27, now it's 28. The club had also talked about how part of the reason they had pivoted to Vegas is because it was going to take too long. And now it's in Oakland and the timeline's about the same, right? Like, so that's sort of my first thoughts. I wonder if they do the old Expos move and basically split up where they play their home games because, you know, this is obviously an untenable situation that they're in now.
Where did the Expos play?
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If you're John Fisher, what is your best case scenario? Like, what is driving you to do this? Is it to be a big cheese in Las Vegas? I just don't see that happening. You're still the owner of the A's. What? He's reviled? Why wouldn't he sell the team? It doesn't seem like he enjoys owning a baseball team. I mean, that's by every indication. What's in it for him? I just don't understand the motivation to be doing what he's doing. He's just reviled.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, kind of answered that version of the question, because Buster Olney from ESPN tweeted something to the effect of like, you know, like sort of what, how much of a nightmare this is. And Cuban was like, yeah, one of the reasons they, you know, baseball owners don't sell is because you get $25 million for being in the club every year. And you just make that over and over. You know, you just make the money. Like you just get, you know, and so it's, yeah, it's like, if you're running a business, this is a, amazingly, a good business, it seems, because it's a monopoly.
But if you sell, you get several more millions. You know what I mean? Like if Joe Lacob buys the A's, now Fisher has, he's got walking around money. You know what I mean? Like he's got more millions. And with that, he can buy goods and services. And he can buy what he wants in Las Vegas.
He could buy a baseball team.
He could buy a baseball team. Yeah.
An actual Major League Baseball team with uniforms and players and everything. You know what? Here's the thing, though. He can sell them also after he's extracted his free ballpark from these rubes in Nevada. And then it becomes a thing where the franchise valuation jumps. Right? Like, that's what you do. Isn't that the whole play? You sell it to, like, people who want that sort of cachet, who are in Las Vegas already, because, as you know, yesterday there's also a 30-year relocation policy in effect, basically a ban that would keep them in Vegas and not let them bounce like this franchise has done before. You know, in Kansas City, they think they were there 11 years and never had a winning year. But anyway, hell, I already lost my point. God, they suck. Sorry. Like, they're terrible. Oh my God.
I do just want to say, again, when Mark talks about the rubes in Nevada, our understanding of Nevada politics is exclusively limited to Martin Scorsese films. Yeah, so we entirely are not totally sure what is going on out there. I suspect they're probably not rubes, and they have, you know, sort of put their hackles up to whatever sort of extraction is going on. But we'll see how it plays out.
And by the way, I don't mean to call the people in Nevada rubes, dude. I went to the University of Nevada.
They're all wearing bolo ties. We know what you think.
No, I didn't say
they put their feet on the desk.
Yeah, we said it before. That is the archetypical Nevadan, is the guy in casino. Like, gosh, I'm so sorry. You know, just, Mr. Alstein, I did not see that coming.
Imagine if you're like a Nevada politician, you're like, I love baseball. I can't wait to listen to the roundtable this week. And Mark Carrig calls you a rube.
I apologize to the fine folks of Nevada. Home means Nevada. I know that.
Yeah, you lived in Nevada. I'm sorry.
I did. I went to school. I'm telling you.
We actually weren't planning on talking about the A's. It's just,
we just can't, though. Like, that's our, this is our, we have to talk about the A's. Like, they're just, it's an ongoing saga, man.
31 win pace.
What do you do when you drive by a train wreck every week? Not look, not talk, not make a comment about the smoldering ruins on the tracks?
I guess I just assumed that they would normalize to like a 55 win team.
You would think.
They still will, but I mean, you know, the Orioles won like 45, you know, not that long ago, you know, 47, I think, in 18. Like, so it's certainly, you just assume, like, okay, you're a bad team. You won 60 games. Like, yeah, whatever. But, man, it's,
can you imagine a team that would finish 16 games behind the 2018 Orioles? I mean, that's what the A's are doing.
That's what I'm like, A's for, yeah.
I just can't conceive of them winning, like, 4 games in a row. It is difficult to even see how that would happen, given their pitching. I was looking this up. Not only are they not very good pitching, but, you know, there's that website that ranks umpires and whether teams catch a break or not. The A's are like the team that has gotten squeezed the most, apparently. So not only do they, you know, not have enough skill at baseball, but they're also not getting much help. And, you know, a lot of that I feel like is like luck. But of course it would be that way for them, right? What's gone right for them?
Well, I wonder if some of that is a product of just like everyone there is just sort of going through the motions. Like, there's so little intensity or importance to anything that happens with an A's game. And so, like, if you're an umpire, you're just, you know, strike. Let's get, you know, we gotta get out of here. Like, there's no point, you know, and the score's 9-0 anyway, so who cares, right? Like, I mean, you've seen bad teams, you know, the Orioles, right, who we'll talk about in a more positive light later on this, you know, this episode, I think. Like, they were a team who was, like, really bad and really hard to watch. But it seemed like even if you agreed with, disagreed with what they were doing, it was clear what they were doing. With the A's, there's just, it does not feel like there is light at the end of the tunnel, even if you are, you know, able to abide tanking.
Yeah. What is the end game here? Like, are they going to get the first overall pick next year? Maybe not, because they're doing the lottery thing now.
Right.
That would be kind of funny in a gallows humor kind of way if they don't get that first overall pick, because if there's ever a team that needs an Adley Rutschman or a Ken Griffey Jr. or a Bryce Harper, it's the A's, but then it would be wasted on them. So
yeah, I mean, it would, I will say that if they get the first pick in 3 years, it will be nice to see the press conference in Atlanta where Dylan Cruz signs his, you know, 7-year $90 million deal. As Austin Riley agrees to move to, you know, left field or something like that.
I love that bit has become a thing. That Anthopoulos just giving out these team-friendly contracts that, you know, ex-Oakland days. It's perfect.
Hey, man. The shoe fits. Yeah, I don't know.
Michael Harris V, all that's anyway.
The second? What's wrong with you?
No, I'm saying like in years later on. Like
okay.
Do you see what I did there? Like years later, they would be signing, I guess, his great, anyway.
Michael Harris is not playing well, by the
way. He's not.
I saw that, yeah. Any thoughts on how to fix him, Andy?
More at-bats. Just needs more seasoning. Just give him some more at-bats. You know, bat him lower in the lineup. You know, just, you know, take the pressure off him. I don't know. Who knows?
I'm going to move on to the topic we were actually going to talk about first, because I'm curious to hear what you guys think. The San Francisco Giants, they are a little froggy. They're 2 games over 500. They're winning. They are winning a series against teams that are ostensibly contending. When I had the podcast with Hunter Pence, people would leave 1-star reviews for different reasons, mostly that we talked too much about the Giants. I don't think that's a problem here because I'm scarred by that. And I generally stay away from the Giants on here because that's my day job. But what do you guys see when you were looking at the Giants? Are you going like, this makes sense? Oh, Andy wants a timeout. All right.
Well, no, I'll get into this. But what did people think you and Hunter Pence were going to talk about?
I don't know. It was a national baseball show. And I'll tell you what, Hunter really is interested. Like it's not faking. Yeah, coffee. He's not faking interest in the Reds bullpen. You know what I mean? Like he's really, when he's got an idea about something to say about the Reds bullpen, he's passionate about it. And he was really good about that. Sometimes a little too good, because we'd be talking about something that we had planned on talking. And then he'd be like, you know what I got to talk about? The White Sox DH. And it'd be like, oh, crap. And I'd like look it up. It's like Jake Canerco. You know, something like that. yeah, I don't know. I didn't think we talked about the Giants that much either. It was just, I don't know.
So the current Giants, I spent a little bit of time at their camp this spring. And the way that the sort of positive framing of them heading into the season was, the general perception is they had like the worst winter possible. Like they struck out on Judge, the Correa deal fell apart. There was not a lot to be excited about with the 2023 Giants. And what their people sort of felt was like, they kind of liked their team, you know, not to win 95 games, but to be competitive, to be in the mix, kind of be where they're at now, a couple games over with a chance to, you know, if the Dodgers are struggling to, you know, compete for the division. And if not, you know, to have a good shot at a wild card. And they felt like that was a good spot because everyone thought they were going to suck and they knew that they were not going to suck. They felt like they had a good team. And that's kind of how it's playing out. It seems like there are times when, you know, as you've watched them, Grant, where you're like, wow, this team sucks. This team is not, you know, fun to watch. They sort of believed internally in their talent. And, you know, you're seeing it. They seem like they can really pitch yet again. You know, Alex Cobb's having a good year. Logan Webb is Logan Webb. Alex Woods had a pretty good year. I think DeSclafani's been pretty good as well. They got some young boys who they've called up who've been doing some things.
Young fellow lads.
Named Casey McGeehee, is that his name? No, Casey Schmidt.
We don't say that name in relation to Giants baseball.
Sorry.
That is the Luis Castillo Steeler. Casey McGeehee.
Hey, you know, speaking of like the Giants' perceived horseshit offseason, Michael Conforto has reminded people that he's a good major league hitter. I mean, I think that's a big part of this too. I mean, like, he's turned it on. That's sort of been his career, right? Like, he's had his ups and downs, even aside from the injuries. But when he's on, oh my goodness, like, he can change a lineup. And it kind of gets back to your point about that offseason, right? He had been sort of that consolation prize. And the last couple of weeks, he's turned it on. It's a big time difference for them.
Yeah, he's been perfectly fine. You know, J.D. Davis has been pretty good. Late night Lamont has been pretty good. Like, when Jock Peterson's healthy, he's pretty, you know, they have a lot of, it's, I don't know, Grant, you would understand this probably better than I do. It seems like they have a lot of the sort of spare-ish parts that were in this, you know, incredible symphony in 2021. And it seems like they've got some of them working. And what that leads to is kind of what in most years 2021 would have been, which is like a 92-88 win season. What, I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I'll never understand the 2021 season. I will never understand that. I was living in, you know, I wasn't living in California anymore, but like, I feel like if I'd still been out in LA, I would have been just trying to go up to the Bay Area every weekend. Cause that team was just, I would love to understand what the heck was going on up there.
It's my job to explain what went on, and I faked it for a year, and you know, now we're here. You make good points about the offseason and being disappointing. I actually liked their offseason a lot. Once it was settled, and once you, okay, the Judge isn't coming, Correa's not coming, who do they have? And I liked who they got. Ross Stripling, Sean Manaea, I was on that train, but they didn't get, they're not getting anything from them. And this is what I always like to bring up, is because you get people when the Giants are losing in the comments or on Twitter, they're saying, fire Farhan. Farhan's got to go. Farhan is the reason for all this. And not really, because he's been every year since he's joined the Giants, he's had to build teams through free agency and subterfuge and waiver claims. And that's hard to do, because eventually you're going to stumble into a Ross Stripling. You're going to step in, you know, Sean Manaea's ERA this season. That's going to happen with free agents. It doesn't matter how smart you are. It's unsustainable. So what you needed to see from a Giants team was, can they figure out how to get homegrown players and fold them into the lineup? That's what's impressive about this team, is that Casey Schmidt's up, Patrick Bailey's up, and they're doing things that are starting to look like, okay, they can sustain this. They can weather a Sean Manaea being terrible, because they can get Tristan Beck and he can absorb some of the innings and he's pretty good. And Kyle Harrison might come up, and Luis Matos is going to be their center fielder for a long, long time. He'll be up later. Doing that's what's impressive to me about the Giants, a lot more so than what they're doing with J.D. Davis or Lamont Wade. I mean, that's impressive too, but now it seems just a touch more sustainable and realistic.
Right. Those are the more important building blocks than like waiver wire roster churn. Not to, you know, demean it. I mean, J.D. Davis has been like, you know, it looks like he's been by OPS plus one of their best hitters along with Lamont. But like, you need, you know, 0-6 players who are, you know, 3-4 win players and possibly better.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day, crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants, an upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads, an ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLBSHOW.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
the
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, will Schmidt have more walks by the end of the year than the Athletics have wins?
That is good. He is a fella likes to swing. He is a free swinging lad.
400 BABIP. I guess like I'd like to swing a lot too if that were the case.
Yeah, that's gonna go down. He does have as Mike Kruko likes to call it, the magic wando, where everything he puts the barrel on, it tends to find a hole. I think you'll see that he's going to be more like a 260 hitter with very limited on base percentage, but the defense is Gold Glove caliber, so that's his calling card.
I did not know that Luis Castillo came up as a Giant, or I guess I'd forgotten.
Yeah, no, it's anyway. He was traded for Casey McGee. He was traded a lot. Yeah, he was, and then I think the Padres had their hands on him for a second.
The Padres did. The Marlins traded him twice.
Yeah, I mean, just yeah. So can you imagine if the Marlins had Luis Castillo and Sandy Alcantara and Pablo Lopez? I mean, they traded him anyways. You want to talk Marlins? Let's talk Marlins.
Not
man.
Really. Yeah, okay. Is Patrick Bailey, like, is the idea that he'll be the starting catcher moving forward? Like, is the BART train out of the station?
BART train's got the upholstery's a little stinky, a little moist.
That's a real life BART reference, by the way, Andy. Yeah, like, that's what they call the subway in the Bay Area.
No, I understand.
And the upholstered seats are gross and moist and disgusting. All right, go on.
BART compliments Bailey a lot because Bailey's hitting left-handers right now. He's a switch hitter, but he shouldn't hit left-handers going forward. That's not been what he's done in the minor leagues. So BART and Bailey do have a peanut butter and jelly thing going. Bailey, to my eyes, looks like a superior defensive catcher. He's so smooth and buttery back there. BART's no slouch, so I think it works well for him. You'll get something out of that position.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's disappointing to not get a frontline catcher, but then also there's a reason you select another catcher a couple years later. It's just, you know, whatever.
Like, I'm old enough to remember when the Giants drafted Buster Posey. They're like, what are you doing wasting a pick when your catcher of the future, Pablo Sandoval, is already on the team? How are you going to fold these guys into the lineup together? Two catchers?
Yeah.
Things work out.
Did
Things
you have write that?
What's that?
Did you write that somewhere? Because I'd love to frame it.
No. I was actually the guy going like, come on, man. Like, he's just, you draft. If you think you got this catcher, don't worry about it. It'll work itself out. I was smart. I was ahead of my time.
Oh, so the round table had got it wrong. You're the one humble bragging.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't exactly call it humble, you know?
I've said it before, but like being smart about baseball in like 2008 was the easiest job in the world. You just had to basically be able to say like, hey, you know, they got this stat called OBP, it's actually pretty good to not make out. So everyone will be like, oh, this man should be a GM. And some of them are.
Dude, the right? Yankees the Yankees made a trade like that because it was Nick Swisher, right? He hit like 198 or whatever, but like his on base was pretty solid and he was hitting it hard. And somebody wrote this big old article about it. Yankees made the move. That person wrote the article is literally a GM of a baseball team right now. So
Who is that?
Peter Bendix did that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Peter Bendix wrote this article about the Swisher trade and why it made all the sense in the world, basically, right as it happened. It's like, oh my God, this guy is going to be so good for them, blah, blah, blah. And here's why. And so now he runs the Rays. Anyway.
Man, that's what I should have done instead of drinking all the time in college, is just like used stats to get to go work for a baseball. No, that wouldn't have worked. I wouldn't have fit in the culture. Anyway.
I would love to cover one of GM Andy McCullough's pressers. Oh, man. God. Just like it would look like the slam dunk contest.
It's like a post-mortem press conference where you miss the postseason by a game and he's got to stand up there and take chucklehead questions.
Yeah. Oh, that would be great.
I felt bad because it was a situation where you kind of just got to ask the question, but I was covering the Orioles Yankees series, and I believe it was Felix Bautista, the Orioles closer, gave up like a bomb to Aaron Judge, and he just, you know, it was 0-2, he hung the world's worst splitter, you know, and so like there's not much to ask in that scenario besides like, what, dude? You know, basically. And like the third question was like, where were you trying to go with the splitter? And like, I'm not like trying to make fun of the guy who asked it. Like, you have to ask that question just so you know. But it just would have been funny if Bautista was like, oh, I wanted it to be above his head. I wanted it to be further up in the zone. And I was like, I wanted it to be down and away. Like every, you know, one time I asked John Roush, who gave up a bomb. And I asked something like, was location the issue? And he goes, what the fuck do you think it was? And it's like, and to, you know, either to my credit or to my detriment, I was like, well, I'm asking you.
So you like doubled down?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just like volleyed it back because I don't know. Like those pressers, like there really is just like one question, which is like, why did you do that? And then maybe like, did it feel bad when you did that? And then after that, it's like, all right, thank you for your time. Like, good luck tomorrow, you know? But I just was laughing at the idea, where were you trying to go with that? And Bautista had been like, I wanted it to be above the zone. I wanted it to be the highest splitter ever.
Do you think that could work? Do you think that's the next Moneyball, as someone who can perfect like a split finger that drops right into the top of the zone, sneaky strikes?
No, because umpires would give up on it. That's the problem with like real 12-6 is curveballs, that a lot of times, you know, Rich Hill, we would freak out about this all the time. He's like, he wanted the automated strike zone. He probably still does, because he felt like umps gave up on his curveball. And so he'd be getting like outside corner or, you know, top of the zone, and they just would like see it and be like, nope, that's a ball. And then it would, you know, come in.
Do you ever hear my Rich Hill story?
No, I'd love to hear it.
That his brother followed me around on Twitter and just like harassed and just made fun of me. And just every time I would say something, he'd be like, oh, you're a moron. Because I guess I wrote something at McCovey Chronicles and he didn't understand the kayfabe of McCovey Chronicles.
Oh,
and
okay.
In my jokes, you know, I was over at SB Nation writing like, hey, Rich Hill's cool as heck. I love his curveballs, but he wasn't seeing that. And so I ended up having to block Rich Hill's brother on Twitter.
Dude,
and I don't block very often. I just was tired of it.
Wow. Rich Hill is the youngest of, I believe, four, and his eldest brother is 19 years older than him, and his youngest brother is 13 years older than him. They taught him how to be left-handed by tying his right hand behind his back.
That sounds cruel.
But it worked.
Hey, the 80s were wild, okay? So.
Mark, this wasn't the 80s.
Wasn't?
This is the 70s, dog.
Oh, yeah. 70s were wild, man.
Well,
yeah.
I've met Rich's family. They're very nice people.
I'm sure they are. It's just, you know.
I'm going to have to send them a message and be like, you know who sucks is that guy Grant Brisby.
Well, someone will pick up on it. I don't know which of the brothers it is.
I hope this makes their family chat. That'd be great. That one a-hole from a couple of years back is back at it again.
Greg Holland's dad once used an inappropriate term to mock me on Twitter. And I quote tweeted it and mocked him for misspelling the inappropriate term. But I did not know it was his dad. I only learned that later when Greg Holland said, "Oh, old Sparky doesn't like you."
Is it Sparky?
That was Greg called his dad Old Sparky. Yeah.
Old Sparky.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, the Giants, they're frisky.
The Giants are frisky. Do you think, are the Padres done?
No. Done? No. Season's too long. They've got too many good players. The vibes are bad, right? The results are bad. Some of the underlying trends are bad. It's, but done, that seems a bit strong, right?
It does seem strong. I'm looking at, you've seen Yu Darvish have these weird seasons before where he can't get out. Blake Snell has just not been great for a while.
This is just kind of who Blake Snell is.
Yeah. I think. Do you want to say that in his voice?
No, I do not. but I mean, he had a very good second half last year. But the first half looked like this. You know, he's got the ability to sort of crank it up, but it just, that's the combination, right? Of the, like his FIP is worse than his ERA, which is, you know, not always how he pitches. That's what I'm saying with some of the underlying trends. I mean, just command is always an issue. And yeah, Darvish does have seasons where you're like, you're Yu Darvish. Why are you doing it? You know, and then the next year he's back to being, you're like, yeah, dude, that guy's Yu Darvish. He's like the best pitcher in the world. Like he just, you know, it's just kind of who he is. He goes through, you know, phases and he, I don't know. He's a very, you know, complicated sort of pitcher to project, I feel like. And then, you know, Musgrove has not been what they expected, you know, not been what they're paying for. And, you know, their best player has been hurt the past, you know, however many weeks and, you know, had not been playing like their best player in Machado. So, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, it's, I don't know. They're five games under. The Dodgers are very vulnerable. The division is still on the table, but little has gone right. And there's little reason to believe it's going to start going right, I guess.
Can we switch focus real quick along the lines of, are they cooked? Are the Toronto Blue Jays cooked? Because it's a different scenario over there. Because the teams in front of him,
those are good ball clubs.
Yeah, even the Boston Redskins at this point have shown enough. I don't like the vibes and the neighborhood they're in, no bueno, right? Like that.
Tell me about the vibes.
Tough.
Tell me about the vibes.
They're losing the kind, like they're sloppy. All right, like they spent all spring, like this is the way to take the next step is to clean it up, and they find ways to lose games. Their bullpen feels like a mess. Alek Manoah being bad has really compromised their rotation. And what's remarkable is that they have only started five guys this year. That's not luck that is going to like persist. So they haven't even had to touch their depth, and usually teams don't want to necessarily have to do that anyway. Things are going to get harder, and this is what they are. Not a good look right now. Like Chapman's cooled off, as you kind of expect after that all-world start. But I feel like they really are losing a bunch of games in bad ways. Like it's sloppy, ugly, frustrating. You know, John Schneider last week screws up a pitching change. So it's like it's everywhere, right? Manager's having a tough year. You know, guys aren't performing, that kind of thing. And yeah, doing that when there's four teams in the division who are pretty good, that's tough. It's a really difficult combination. They might be cooked.
Cooked, I mean, that's so strong.
It is strong. It is strong. But like that's sort of the point of the game, right? It's to do this after Memorial Day so we can look back and giggle about how stupid we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Chapman has really cooled off. I mean, he's got a 550 OPS in May after, you know, an 1100 in April. That is a significant decrease in temperature, I would say. Yeah, I mean, the Manoah stuff, like the Manoah's a big issue because the gas man's been what you'd expect. Bassett and Berríos, I mean, Berríos has been better than he's been in recent years. You know, Bassett's been about what you'd expect for, you know, a number three, number four pitching in the East for the first time. Kikuchi's been fine as a, you know, a five starter, again, pitching in the East. You know, the bullpen, eh. But yeah, like, I mean, they were kind of banking on Manoah being a legit top of the rotation force, and he's just not that. And then you combine it with, the catchers kind of coming back down to earth, just
one getting hurt.
Yeah. Well, one getting hurt. I mean, it's, yeah. And it's, the pace just does not let up. I mean, the Rays have had the best record in the sport all year. The Orioles are not far behind them, and the Yankees are not far behind them. And I think all three of those teams are in it to win it,
I'm more bullish on the Blue Jays, I think, than Mark is, for sure. I think that just the idea that Berríos is pitching as well as he's pitching, that was a huge question mark for them. I get that Alek Manoah is struggling in a way that suggests that he's broken, not just in a, he's allowing a few more home runs. Like, no, he can't throw strikes. He looks bad, and I don't see a quick fix for that. But I would go through, and you can pick out, like, Bo Bichette's going bananas, and he's having a great year. But between Guerrero, Dalton Varsho, Kirk, George Springer, one or two of these guys is going to start going off. And they're just a really good offensive team when they have a full complement of players. I'm not so worried about one pitcher. I would worry about Manoah's season if they get to the postseason. Who's your number one? You start those questions. But they can go through an entire season with a couple dead spots in the rotation because the lineup should be that good. And I think it will be. I think that's my hot take, and I'm ending it like this.
I mean, I'd be more on board with that if their bullpen weren't, sort of a struggle right now, figuring out who you can trust down there, because it seems like everybody's had their struggles. So, I mean, Grant, I get it. I think Grant's point is well taken. I just feel like they have other deficiencies that get them. Yeah, unfortunately, one of them being literally just the fact that division is just so darn tough. That you just can't afford to hope to bang your way out of it when you have other clubs that have similar firepower that they're trying to do the same thing. I don't know. I think it's just a tougher road for them than San Diego. And I think it's completely based on just the competition of the division.
You know what they're giving me? They're giving me a late 90s Rangers vibes. Remember remember those teams where it's like you would have all these sluggers and they're in their 20s and they're doing that, and then all of a sudden it's like your ace is Rick Helling.
Yeah, right. It's like 40 homer guys and 4.5 ERAs kind of thing.
Exactly. Their ERA in 1998, team ERA was 4.99. I just remember that team always being the classic, if they only had some pitchers. So maybe that's going to be the Blue Jays' fate. It's wild, though, because they would be tied for first in the AL Central.
Yeah, I mean, the Central's bad. Awful. Those teams are not good. Yeah, those teams are not good. And it's as we've talked about from the beginning of the year, Mark was on this right away about how the balanced schedule is going to benefit the East. And you're just seeing, they're beating up on everyone. These teams are so much better than the competition.
The Twins aren't just in first place. They're the only team that has a positive run differential. The next best run differential in the AL Central or the Guardians, -33. That's the second best run differential. They're not just losing, they're getting boat raced in when they have to play other teams in other divisions.
I mean, in fairness, -33 is like a good week in Oakland. That's like a week where you've won a game. Anyway, sorry. Keep going back to that.
Yeah. The A's have scored more runs than the Tigers and the Guardians. So there's that.
They've hit homers, nice. Right? That's the thing. They've put the ball in the seats. It's just no one gets on base. I mean,
they're going to make me have to learn who Brent Rooker is.
He's going to play right field for the Braves through 2028. It's a $55 million deal. It's very good. Rick Helling, by the way, is the childhood nemesis of Chuck Klosterman. Just a fun fact.
Bully situation?
They played sports against each other in North Dakota, and Chuck Klosterman has written about how Rick Helling is his nemesis.
Because I think Klosterman needs to be bullied a little bit.
He's very tall. He's a tall man.
Is he really?
Another thing as we round out here, I don't have Orioles fever. However, I do like watching the Orioles play. It's a good club. Grant, you're right to have them as your all MLB.TV team. Fun group.
They are a blast. Rutschman is maybe the best catcher in baseball, and he's also a huge I Think You Should Leave fan. Season 3 out today. I got my corncob TV hat on. But yeah, no, they are. I mean, Cedric Mullins is a delight. They're fun. And even the players that, you know, like Gunnar Henderson isn't a star yet, but he's fun. They're just a super fun team. And I cannot wait for them to trade for Lucas Giolito. I don't know. But yeah, no, they're fun.
I will say, I'm going to throw out the comp here. It's not exact. They remind me of the Royals.
There it is.
Thank you. More 14 than 15. Actually, I don't, well, in some ways, I don't know. Look, the starting rotation is not the strength, but it is competent, right? The bullpen is dynamic at the back end, you know, around Bautista, you know, Cano, Colombe, you know, Brian Baker's having a nice year. And they have a young, athletic group of position players that are aggressive on the bases, can hit for a little bit of power, and they defend well. It's the closest, you know, it's not an exact comp, but that is that's kind of the first team in a little while, besides really the 16 Cubs, that, you know, reminded me of that Royals group.
I will push back on that just a little.
Let's do it.
Because they're not hitting for average. And that, to me, is the hallmark of those Royals teams, is that you would get these guys up and they would all hit .313 with a .363 on base percentage and a .313 slugging percentage. Right. And just slap it. And then you get a single, then another single is first to third. And then there's like a sack fly. Like the average
is 1,000 Aokis. Yeah.
Oh gosh. They were so maddening to watch if you were rooting for the other team, because they would string them together, and your dumb team could never string hits together like that. And here come the Royals. So I would say, I would push back on that. But in terms of young, exciting, speedy, athletic, I get where you're coming. And the bullpen.
It's not exact. And it's really just, you know, shortening games too, the way they shorten games, it seems like. And that makes it easier on the starting pitchers. You know, if you're only asking them to go, you know, five or six, and you have the ability to shuffle in. Now, again, though, that's hard to do over the course of a season. We will see, you know, if Yennier Cano and Bautista and all these guys are like still dudes in August. It's, you know, they're bullpens, so who knows? But yeah, you can see at least a blueprint there.
Well, I think that's the great equalizer, isn't it? Let's say that those bullpen arms somehow like stay healthy and you're not seeing a giant drop off for basically running a marathon they've never run before. You take them against anyone in the field now, right? Like if you cut a game to six innings and that's the kind of heat you got coming out of there, like just these like nasty, fire breathing, difficult to touch type of guys. Like, I mean, that's, they short circuit any lineup. And I think that's sort of the fun of it, right? Is that here's, you know, you have, especially the way the game is played now, to be able to deploy those types of weapons is pretty darn impressive and puts them on even ground with anyone.
It's the sort of club where you just feel like, you know, look, Grayson Rodriguez has not pitched well, so maybe he's an exception, but most nights they're going to be in the game. Like, you know, the starting pitcher might not be a number one, but they're going to be, you know, competent and manage it through. And you're going to look up in the sixth or seventh inning and the Orioles will be involved in, you know, whether in the lead or close, you know, they're going to be in more games, I think, than you'd expect, I guess, just given the sort of like general, you know, statistical mediocrity of who their starters are. I just, that's my sense.
How did you pronounce Cano's first name?
Yennier.
I think it's Yennier. Well, I'm just glad that you said it, not me, because I.
It is Yennier. I'm sorry.
It's, yes. You know, it's,
what is no? I actually was saying Yennier, and then I looked on Baseball Reference and saw that I was wrong, and then I forgot because several days passed. So I apologize.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't the one screwing.
No, you're right. You're right.
When I go on Baltimore Talk Radio to talk Orioles, which I don't do. All right, this has been episode 51 of the Roundtable. Do us a favor. Can you guys and gals listening, if you are enjoying the Roundtable, can you leave some reviews at wherever you get your podcasts? If, say, Apple, maybe make them 5-star reviews and talk about how charming we are and how being giggling idiots is filling a niche that you didn't know that you were lacking. Just let's get our reviews up to a 2.5 average.
Yes, please. Please.
You can also check this out on YouTube, youtube.com at The Athletic Baseball Show, because boy, if you think listening to us is good, you should watch us, because we are just three handsome dudes, just a lot of eye candy on this. So do that. All right. Episode 51. We'll be back next week to talk about baseball, because that's what we do. Thank you for listening. See you then.
I was very wrong.